Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome back, everyone. Campfire Tales, and welcome to tonight's story. Behind us, we have X-Files, Goosebumps, Are You Afraid of the Dark? And on that corner, Supernatural, and over here, Heroes. Yeah.
Nerd alert!
Anyways, tonight's horrifying story is about a small town and these kids who like to play tricks on each other and dares about this mysterious cave by the beach. See how long you could stay inside without freaking out and running out. But what happens when not everyone returns? Stay tuned. The Dweller in the Void. The kids down in Raker's Cove know things the adults don't. They know the shadows lingering under their bed is the boogeyman. They know the cry of a wolf in the night is a snarling wolfman. They know the dusty old sea cave down by the shore is home to something evil. Growing up, we were always told to stay away from that cave. That monolithic growth sitting idly on the edge of the beach. The entrance was a tight slit that you could jimmy through with enough effort, and it quickly gave way to a cavernous chamber. We were told to stay away, that we could easily trap ourselves in the entrance or slip in the dank and crack our heads clean open. Of course, we smiled and nodded and made plans to explore behind our parents' back. In the schoolyard, we swapped ideas on the true reason we were banned from the cave. Ted theorized it was haunted by the damned souls of pirates who had succumbed to the elements and died in there after seeking refuge. Jenny said that her dad had said the cave had been used as a bootlegger's den, whatever that was, and gangsters had hidden their ill-gotten gains there, but were caught before they could spend it. Ralph, a pug-nosed bully with a lisp, claimed a dragon lived there, guarding a hoard of gold under his belly. He suggested in the dead of night you could hear it bellowing in the wind, daring anyone to try and take it. Whatever the true cause, it became a bit of a sport to crawl into the cave and see how long we could last in the dreary dark. It sounds easy enough, of course, this game of dares and one-upmanship. But then you actually get in there. After you squeeze through the slit, your chest flattened as you shuffle in, and you could breathe properly again, you'll find the main chamber. I'm sure there are other passages or tunnels leading deeper in, but we always stuck there. For all our talk, I suppose none of us were that brave. In the center of the chamber was a massive circular pool. The water was a sparkling green, dimly lit by rays of sunshine crawling down from cracks in the ceiling. If you squinted and looked up, you could see them, long and sharpened cones pointing right at you. I tended not to look up. The cave walls themselves smelt of aged salt and felt like it to the touch. They were stained with moist reminders of the sea's past, the water long since receded into the shimmering pool. The game was simple. Head into the main chamber and see how long you lasted till you got spooked. Again, sounds easy enough. But whatever outlandish lie we came up with about the cave was nothing compared to the simple truths. See, we called this place the Void Cave. No sound from the outside world could penetrate those walls, and vice versa. The only real light was the ghostly green glow of the water, like a shroud of otherworldly energy just blanketing you. That odd glow was something to do with the way sun reflects against the rocks. Whatever the case, it gave us the willies. All you could do was sit back against the cool-feeling wall and wait it out. There was no reception in there. In fact, tech in general seemed to fritz out once you passed the barrier. All you could do was twiddle your thumbs and listen to the sounds of the cave. It was far and few between, but droplets would fall from the ceiling. Every few minutes, a plop would echo out, or it would hit the calm water with a plunk, and you could count the ripples. Seconds would melt into minutes. Minutes would drag into hours. The longer you sat there, the more your mind would start to trick you. You would feel the air start to stiffen around you. You'd feel something flutter past the hairs on your neck. Things would start to take shape on the walls, fuzzed dots that would dance into misshapen monstrosities. Sometimes the wind would whistle in, and it would sound like raspy whispers in your ear, mumbled words in a dead language, calling out from the dark. The isolation would eat at you until you scrambled to your feet and scurried out of there like a frightened crab. You would be met by the jeers of your peers calling you out in the blinding light of the afternoon sun. I had gone in twice, once for 20 minutes, the second for about 45. I was in the lead for the longest time. Jenny and the others would only last about a half an hour at most. They would come out of the cave shivering and playing it up, saying the place gave them the heebie-jeebies. That was until Ralph went in. He was a bit of a wide child, so I was surprised he managed to squeeze in. He went in there with a cocky grin and a boastful attitude, saying he could beat my 45 easy. He was in the void for a solid hour and a half at least. He was in there so long, it sparked debate whether or not we should go in after him. All our attempts at calling his name were futile. The cave simply devoured our shouts. Finally, he emerged, wiggling his broad shoulders out of there. He still had that cockeyed grin, but his complexion was ghastly pale, and there was a staggering limp in his step as he waddled towards us. We crowded around him, mystified at just how long he had remained. He dared us all to beat that and took great pride in rubbing his time in my face. I remember how pissed I was this lipsy slob claimed to be the bravest, and in my wounded state I announced that tomorrow morning I would stay in there for 3 whole hours. I was looked upon with awe and doubt as we left the beachfront to spend our summer-filled day elsewhere. The next morning, my 3-hour expedition was the talk of the schoolyard, so to speak. It had spread like wildfire, and even my younger brother Billy had caught wind of it. Billy was 3 years my junior, a snot-nosed kid with a gap tooth and a head with a bright orange mop. Billy pulled me aside the morning of and begged me to take him with me. Billy wanted bragging rights for all his buddies to see, that he was cool enough to hang with the big kids. He looked at me with eyes and temperament of a baby doe, and I couldn't refuse him. I wish to Christ I had. The day Billy died was a warm and welcoming one. Not a cloud hung overhead, and the ocean was calm and drifting. Tiny waves curled up and splashed our ankles as we stood before the void cave. A crowd had gathered on the beach. Kids of all ages had come down to see us achieve the impossible. Billy was bouncing up and down the beach, pumped up to set the unbeatable record. I had a fleeting moment of hesitance, but as the growing crowd cheered us on, I stuffed it down and began my descent. I went first, sucking my gut in as I slid through the crevice. It was a slow and steady shuffle, careful not to cut my cheeks on the stony surface. The cheers began to fade the deeper I went, and were cut short when I entered the main chamber. Billy had an easier time shuffling through. He was half my size and scrawny for his age. I noticed the look of confusion on his face when he popped out, the sudden quiet immediately unnerving. In front of me, the eerie glow of the center pool beckoned to us, but I grabbed Billy by the wrist and sat us down a few feet away. The floor of the chamber was oddly smooth, like freshly cut sandstone. Billy plopped down next to me, his eyes darting around the chamber. He turned to me, confusion on his face.
"Is this it?"
He sounded disappointed.
"This is it,"
I confirmed, staring blankly forward. The center pool was completely still, the edge lime green and sparkling. I didn't dare gaze down into the inky void it held. Jenny confided in me once that she had dropped a quarter in there once. It vanished from sight instantly, the drink swallowing it whole. The minutes began to drip as we sat in silence. Billy sighed and drummed on his knees while I zoned out, hoping the time would simply fly by. Occasionally, something would drip into the pool or something would bubble up. I could make out faint shapes near the surface, little pockets of air coming up as they swam around. I felt Billy's bony elbow in my ribs, and I resisted the urge to smack him one.
"What?"
I hissed at him. I happened to glance at my stopwatch. Only 25 minutes had passed.
"Why do they call it the Boyd Cave?"
he whispered. I rolled my eyes at the flubbed V.
"Void, void,"
I teased as he slugged me in the arm.
"Whatever, why do they call it that?"
he repeated. "Because no sound comes out, no sound comes in. You haven't noticed we can't even hear the waves crashing?" I said. He mulled that over. Then he cupped his hands over his mouth and leaned towards the crevice.
"Hey, Jenny, Tommy's got a huge crush on you!"
he screamed. My face flushed with crimson panic and became as hot as a steaming kettle. I pushed him down as he bursted out laughing, the thud of his fall bouncing against the walls.
"Dude, shut up!"
I growled at him. He rolled around on the smooth stone floor, braying like a donkey. Finally, he sat up, wiping the tears from his eyes.
"But I thought you said sound doesn't leave the cave,"
he said in a mocking tone. I shoved him once more and sulked against the wall, still red as a tomato.
"Not the point, Dillweed," I grumbled.
He giggled to himself a few moments more before settling down, and the booming silence returned. Time began to slip by
as the cavern walls seemed to get closer with every passing moment. I knew it was just my mind playing tricks on me, but every creak and wind crawling through the rocks sounded like venomous whispers. At times I swore I felt an icy breath on the back of my neck. I gasped and clasped my hand, finding nothing there, of course. Billy seemed to be doing better with the extreme silence, but I could tell he was bored. His face was slumped, and he was hunched over, head in his bouncing knees. At one point, he got up and began pacing, loudly humming this annoying tune to himself. I watched him entertain himself for a while, the cave filling with that annoying hum. It sounded like a mix of "Take Me Out of the Ball Game" and "My Fair Lady." Of course, we both grew tired of that, and Billy collapsed onto the ground in a sprawl. He was a couple of feet closer to the edge of the pool. He looked at me with boredom forever seared into his face. "How much longer?" he whined. I glanced at my stopwatch. 1 hour and 15 minutes. "Halfway there," I said to him as he groaned. The faux whispers around the stalactites began to slow to a crawl, and finally nothing was heard in the cave save for our exhaled breaths. I felt a pit in my stomach start to form, my pulse quickening, but I wasn't sure why. Something was amiss. I could feel it. I glanced around the room and found nothing but the familiar shadows of the pool dancing on the walls. They mocked me with gaping jaws and gnashing teeth. I could feel the walls laughing at me, telling me it was too late now, that I was trapped here forever. They surrounded us, you see, these shadows. They were circling around us like we were the main course at a feast. I knew it was just my mind playing tricks on me, my brain trying to freak me out enough so I would book it out of this bizarre place. I had to tough it out, though, just so I could rub it in Ralph's face. Come to think of it, when I first proclaimed I was going to outpace him, he got this odd look on his face. Not annoyance, more like a nervous twitch. In fact, I hadn't seen him on the beach this morning. My eyes wandered around the walls, and I could make out strange etchings and carvings. Didn't faze me at first. We all had taken the pocket knife in at some point and carved our initials in, proof we weren't cowards. Other names and initials were graffitied onto the walls as well. I could barely make them out in the silent dark. Vulgar drawings and sprayed things like "Jonesy was here" and "Mark sucks dick." I laughed at the crude words of those who came before, probably teenagers who were just as bored in this small town as we were. On the far edges of the wall were cracked and dusted drawings. They looked ancient and were carved into the cave walls with the precision of a surgeon. There was some weird language accompanied the crude stick figures, who were locked in eternal combat with fishy-looking beasts. It was something to the effect of detailed squiggly lines. To this day, I don't know what it said, or what language it even was. It looked old, that's all I could really confirm. We were past the halfway point now, and the dreaded quiet was starting to get to me. It had been 20 minutes now, and even the dripping was gone. Billy was still sprawled on the floor, which I noticed was a tone of pearl white, a stark contrast to the shades of green and stained black on the walls. Billy snapped his head towards me, a frown on his face. "What'd you say?" he mumbled. I looked at him dumbfounded.
I didn't say anything,
I replied. He rolled his eyes at me and turned his back, gazing at the ever-still pool. After a few more moments, he sat up again and snapped towards me, anger in his eyes. You did it again. I'm not going over there. The water smells rank, he said with disgust. What are you talking about? I squared my face at him. You keep telling me to go in the water, he complained. I haven't said anything in like 40 minutes. You're just trying to scare me. It's not going to work. He pouted as he turned away from me. Whatever, I said under my breath. With the bickering over with, we resumed our solitary waiting. We were past the halfway point now. In theory, we could have left with our heads held high. We could have. We should have. In a blink, Billy groaned in annoyance and shot up like a weed. He waltzed over to the edge of the pool, turning his back to it as he plopped down to face me.
There, happy? I'm in the water, he brayed.
Bill, I don't know what you're talking about. Be careful you don't fall in.
He waved his nose at me as he turned around and dangled his feet. He was wearing these Velcro things that lit up with red and blue flare. He liked to run laps around the neighborhood at night, a blur of color in the stark darkness. From the far side of the chamber, I heard light splashing as he kicked his feet. I counted the ripples from each impact as they scattered the surface. The splashes echoed around the chamber, the sound so dense it was like a stinging in my ear amongst the silence. Billy tilted his head down towards the murky deep.
It's really dark. How deep do you think it goes? He asked.
Ends of the earth, right down to the core, probably. I confidently replied as Billy snorted.
I bet if you jumped in, it would take you to like a billion years to reach the bottom. He mused.
I don't think you could hold your breath that long, bud, I laughed.
Probably not.
He stopped mid-sentence. He was looking straight down. He had stopped kicking even. He sat there, frozen, staring at something. I glanced up, noting just how close to the edge he really was. I also noticed he was trembling. The air in there had chilled dramatically. He looked like he was about to turn and run, but he became a blur as something yanked him into the water. He managed to get out a small yelp before he went under, and the only sounds were splashing and gurgles. For a moment, I couldn't believe it. Then I scrambled up and raced to the edge.
Bill! Billy!
I screeched at the pool. I looked down and saw nothing. No trace of him in that ink. God, I had never actually looked that close before. The water, it seemed thicker the further down you went, like an oil well. Then I saw it. A faint flash of blue and red, fading rapidly as it was pulled down into the depths. Without hesitation, I jumped in. The water was colder than ice. If it weren't for the sheer amount of panic and adrenaline flowing through me, I think I would have went into shock then and there. I squinted, eyes stinging from the salty brine I found myself in. I wish I could describe just how empty that pool felt. It was devoid of anything. As I dived deeper, it felt like I was swimming into a bottomless pit. The green glow faded, and the walls were non-existent. There was only me and the fading light. My lungs began to burn as I dove deep, struggling to keep the lights in view. I could feel the sting of rancid salt prying at my eyeballs as my vision became cloudy. Soon enough, what little hope of my brother's lights sank away. I clawed at my chest, my throat. I had to get out of there. I swam upwards, arms stretching towards the surface. It looked like an otherworldly portal, that lime green glow, what little sunlight shone. I heaved myself upwards as voices called out to me from the deep. They were all around me, hideous, angry things. They demanded that I stay below with them, called me a coward for leaving Billy behind. It was all in my head. It had to be, right? I felt something tug on my feet as I pulled myself towards the light, lungs bursting out of my chest. The pressure was obscene. My head throbbed and told me just to let it happen. 1,000 wandering fingers seemed to claw at me from all sides, trying to drag me back down below and seal my fate. I pushed it all away as I rushed upwards, breaching the surface with a thunderous gasp. I thrashed my way to the edge, coughing up black liquid. The water seemed to cling to my body. It was this vivacious slime that stank like bile and decayed minerals. I grasped at the sides, huffing and puffing as I caught my breath. With a grunt, I heaved myself out of the water, clothing dripping and clinging to me as I crawled along the floor. I collapsed and held back tears of anguish, rubbing the hate out of my sullen eyes. He was gone. I think I knew it the second he hit the water. He fell and hit a rip current or something. It was pure luck I didn't get grabbed. Grabbed. No, that was the wrong word for it. There was nothing down there. It was absurd. My mind playing its sick games with me, making me think I was surrounded by snickering beasts trying to drag me to a watery grave. I looked back at the pool. It was bubbling with foam and churning water as a massive shape loomed at the surface. I crawled away in horror at the thing. A pair of long, gangly limbs shot out from below, spraying the icy drink everywhere. They clasped to the ground with an angry thud. I struggled to call them arms, because while it had massive four-fingered hands, the limbs themselves seemed blurry and unfinished. The limbs were coated in a sloppy, mucus membrane that oozed on the floor. What you could call flesh of this thing was just melting off of its skeletal body. I could see fossilized bones and decayed tissue clinging to them. Another pair of sickly limbs emerged, as a soothing yet crackled voice spoke. It was booming in my mind. It felt like my head was going to split open with every throbbing word.
"Come to the water, Tommy."
It spoke as the second pair rested at the far end of the pool. A massive hump of something clung to the surface, this groaning noise echoing across the cave, shaking the walls with the cries of this lumbering beast. A third pair now, gripping the front edge facing me. Skeletal fingers clasped the edge, the sludge flesh falling off them in clumps, becoming one with the sea as it fell with a splash. The head of the great Leviathan began to rise. It had brilliant blue diamonds for eyes, four on each side of its triangular skull. Mounds of its oily hide fell to the side as it rose. It seemed to unhinge its jaw like a snake, and I believe in its gaping maw, I saw hell that day. It was cold and dark, an unending void this serpent held. From his bottomless gullet, I swore I heard Billy crying out for me, begging me to come save him.
Come swim with me, child. Bathe in the eternal dark with me.
It tempted.
It leered over me, emitting a guttural growl as I felt its eight sparkling eyes stare at me hungrily. The ground around me became warm as I stared into hell, and I screamed and screamed, my cries lost to those outside this cave of the damned. I don't remember how I escaped the clutches of that thing. My memory of the next 3 days after that is very fuzzy, actually. I'm told I did not emerge from the crevice on the beach. The crowd eagerly awaited my full 3 hours, amazed at our commitment. When 3 hours became four, panic began to spread amongst the crowd, yet no one could muster the courage to go in after us. It was only when someone spotted me up the beach, standing among the waves, did the horror set in. I was halfway down the shore, standing there covered in oily mucus, looking dead-eyed at the receding tide. As they rushed towards me, they saw I was holding a soggy, worn-out shoe. It was small, and dull lights struggled to blink on the sole. Police were called, and our parents soon became wise to our summer game. They searched the cave and found no trace of Billy or the decaying serpent that lurked below. They thralled the shore. A body was never found. Nothing of his ever washed up, save for the lonely shoe. No trace of Billy remained. When I was finally lucid enough to explain myself, I screamed at the cops that Billy had been taken by this horrid thing. They refused to believe me, of course. The shrink I was dragged to explained that the trauma of seeing Billy fall in and get washed away by the current was too much. That I had concocted this whole elaborate sea monster tale to hide my trauma and lessen a guilt-ridden mind. After all, I was the older brother. He was my responsibility. A fact my parents never let me forget. As school started in the fall, I would get whispered looks and accusing glances from my peers. When I got older, I learned that the town gossip was that I had drowned Billy, and parents warned my friends to stay away or they would be next. Kids can be cruel, adults more so. My childhood became a friendless husk filled with shame, and my nagging guilt followed me all the way to college. Ironically, only Ralph treated me with kindness. Sometimes he would sit with me at lunch, and we would give each other knowing looks in the hall. This was 10 years ago, and the pain of losing Billy still lingers like a nail in my heart. My current therapist suggests I write all this down, and that it would help me break through the fiction and see fact. Looking at it now, it all feels hollow. Who knows? Maybe they're right and I'm just crazy. Maybe I did conjure up this elaborate fantasy to shield myself from the truth. After all, the adults in Raker's Cove know things the kids don't, you see. We know the boogeyman creeping under the bed is just a passing shadow. We know the wolfman stalks the forest is just a lonely wolf. We know that the old cave down by the shore is just that. And nothing more.